coming at you live from the heart of Lincoln, America. This is Old School, sponsored by the Mercado by Certified Piedmontese, Nebraska Football Hall of Famer Jay Foreman and Austin Orman. Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
What up, Jay Foreman, Austin Orman, Old School, the new school way. We are brought to you by the Mercado Certified Piedmontese Special Ingredients and Butcher Shop, 84th and Havelock, 30th and Yankee Hill, 85th and Andermatt / Old Cheney, and 168th and Maple up there in the O. We're live on this. This is a gorgeous day at 1040 O Street, about 60-something degrees, no wind, perfect grilling weather. So head over to the Mercado. They got, the Butcher Shop is one of my favorite places to go besides Sam's and Costco. So
if you're a grill master or a grill master in training, you'll want to be there.
Yeah, they'll hook you up. And you can all, they have single serving and family size pre-made meals too. Mm-hmm. And some pasta, and I think they have some candy and stuff like that as well. So they got a lot of variety over there, just not meat, but I go in there to see what I can put on the grill. But one person that was cooking last Saturday night, and I'm going to say this is, Coach Dana Holgorsen making it easy for TJ Lateef to get into a rhythm. Now, if you can see on the screen here, it's 14-7. So it's a crucial part of the game right before halftime. So you're trying to make the most out of, this last 2 minutes and 44 seconds. So you put what you want to do for a young quarterback. And I know I'm talking from a defensive perspective, but this is what he was, obviously a really good thing what he was doing. Obviously, it's man to man. When you just look at these two guys right here, where am I? Okay. Oh, sorry. When you see these two guys right here, mugging right here, it's man-to-man. There's no zone right here. Got man free, right? And then also, just to get double verification, you sent Dane Key in motion. This is the guy covering him. So it's man-to-man. Mm-hmm. And so now you're just giving him a simple read. And most likely, man-to-man means this linebacker right here, I'll just do the circle of his helmet, has the running back man-to-man. So what they're doing is reading where he's going to align for or how he's going to obviously try to cover Dane Key, and then they're reading this whole linebacker, right? Because if this whole linebacker plays in the hole, and you'll see on this next slide, then he would be helping on the route that actually Dane Key caught for explosive pass play. Then he most likely would have thrown to the either one-on-one matchup Heinrich Harburg against a little pipsqueak DB, or he would have came back to potentially one of these reads there, or he would have took off.
Because right? At that point, if that guy's sitting in the hole, the guy responsible for TJ Lateef is really no one at that
point. No one at that point. I don't think maybe he had earned enough credibility like Nico to have a hole defender. They would have probably had a little bit of delayed rush by this guy here, right? Because you can see that he's standing up kind of looking at the quarterback. But either way, they would probably rather give up a quarterback run of 8 to 10 yards versus a 30-something yard pass play. And so this is a really good play design, get in motion so he can read, take all the guesswork out of it, really low pressure. He would have ran this with Dylan, but this is how UCLA is going man-to-man. There's no fair dodging. You just read off the whole defender and read also the depth of how he's trying to cover Dane Key here. And that's also important because if he's playing off and in what you're going to see here, we used to call this an angle route, right, by the running back. And what it just take that angle route. So angle route by the running back would be, I'm going to go all the way back and erase this, right? So the angle route by the running back would be if the running back comes out here trying to get this linebacker to overrun and come here. Okay, so watch this next slide here. We'll go to the next slide and watch what they do here. Okay, so the play's going, right? So now you're seeing everything's declared, right? This linebacker is trying to secondary rush, right? He's trying to come up and see, I think that's Mosey, see who he's blocking, kind of take him out of the passing, out of the route, right? You got this outside rusher rushing. So that obviously, the whole defender is either spying the quarterback. In this case, he is spying the quarterback, which I don't really like, but he's spying the quarterback. And so now you have one-on-one Heinrich Harburg against the defensive back. So he's just trying to just bully him, right? They played into their hands, right? They should have maybe tried to run inside out or switch or something like that. They could have made some sort of call, you know, to really eliminate this play right here. So he's trying to guard Dankey or cover Dankey from 7 yards deep off man. And it's what, second and seven. Second and seven.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially, if
and you're at the 35 yard line,
you have no chance.
No chance.
And also, right here, I want to get this back. I'll go back one more slide right here. Okay. This is a little trick. This is a little tip right here. When this guy goes in motion, all right, he running all the way out here. He coming back inside. He's coming back inside. I want to, since Nick Sanders, listen, I want to have really good English, right? You know, I'm shooting him the bird in my mind. So reason why, if he's coming in motion this way, what's he going to do? Run in the flat? That's fine.
Congratulations. Right. Cool.
He's trying to get something up the field or inside. So as a defensive back, you got to know that. You got to play top down hard. All right. Now, if he hits you on an option route, then you just got to be able to tackle. So they really played and played themselves into that right there. So you see right there, they're reading the whole defender. The whole defender is reading the quarterback. So right there, TJ Lateef is like, oh, I got money right now. This Dankey has just got to make me cash money records. Right. And he's going to run what we used to call right here. And what, and this is like a linebacker from depth covering an angle route. So essentially, they're just taking a route from the middle of the formation and putting it here because this is a tight end here. This is a really cool play call. It's an old school play call. It's not a new play call, but it's just getting back to basics, letting you beat yourself. Because when I would have to cover a running back that would be offset here with a tight end, I would have to be able to fight through this or communicate. We might call banjo. We might switch it. We might play top down, kind of both of us play like kind of real soft. And once it declares, I have the first inside, whatever it is. But he's playing man to man on Dankey right now. He is praying that Dankey goes to the flat because he can come up and make that play.
Mm-hmm. Well, Spoiler alert.
Yeah, not so fast. And you see this right here with the linebacker looking at the quarterback. He's not trying to help right there. They don't do that much. I don't understand it with as many mesh routes they run in today's football. You can get a lot of crossing routes. They don't have the whole defender help. Maybe it's because of the 5 yard rule, but with Dankey, he's going to create separation here within 2 or 3 yards. You could really get a good, hammer on him or make the pass a little bit harder. So
we throw the timing off at the very least.
Throw the time, making TJ Lateef
freshman quarterback first start.
So when he throws this, he's going to catch it right around the hash. All right.
Ooh, okay. That's a straight line from where Lateef stands.
Right, and he's running this way. He's running away from the defender, mm-hmm. right? So when you think about this, if this whole defender was able to center field turn and make him throw it, he'd have to throw it. That's a harder pass right there. They don't make him do that. So when you look at this next slide here, right here, he gone. Look at this. Look at this. He just had to throw to that secondary window. This is good patience by him. Watch. Because very easily as a freshman, you know, you want to throw it right there. You throw it to him. You just wait till he clears. Look at him. Now he's not even looking at Dankey. He's looking at Heinrich Harburg just bullying this receiver. Actually, his pass interference or defensive holding. Now he has to come around here and try to catch him. Or worst case scenario, he comes under and Dankey can outrun it.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect play call. UCLA played right into it. This whole defender, he's trying to read the eyes of the quarterback. Right, which is funny, bro. He's just looking there. Okay, you sprinting to the sideline, you're making it easier. When he's looking right, his feet are on the hash. Right, look at his feet. Look at TJ Lateef's right foot. You should be
on the hash,
waiting right here. You might have got you a pick, but you ran out here like you were about to pick and go up the sidelines.
Whoop!
Like it was a stationary like X route. Not happening.
No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you. With 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Right here. Ball's there. Right here. I guarantee.
Oh, crap. Too late.
I've been there. I didn't say, oh, crap. I said something else. Buyer's remorse right there. Mm. He bought the cheese. He took the cheese.
Well, and then you see on the top that safety, too.
Look at it.
Because Harburg ran that pipsqueak out of the way, and he couldn't get over top. Had to go
Harburg
underneath
ran
this guy.
A corner route. These two ran into each other like the Bobbsey twins, right? Look at Dane Key.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Explosive play. Good play call. Good play call. Really good execution. Also, good protection there by the offensive line. Winning right there. Winning. So you want to give everybody credit. That's that offensive.
Just back up to that previous. Sorry, just a sec. He's got 2 yards of space as a bubble on every side. Probably.
Oh, yeah.
At least.
Yeah.
And then more in front of him. Obviously, left tackle there. Guy's trying to come back inside a little bit. But that's plenty of space to set that back foot, step up, and throw.
Oh, yeah. He's strong in the pocket, right? He hasn't ran out of the pocket. Delivering the ball, right? He's throwing him open, right? Right on target, right? This is like a point guard. On time, on target. Really good execution right there. Allowed Dane Key to, right there. Now he's past, look at him. He's still running here. 2nd and 7. Okay. Inside the 35-yard line. And he probably gets another 6 or 7 yards.
Yeah, ends up at the 12.
Right. And this is the guy trying to catch him from behind. Not happening. You just can't.
Yeah, that guy peeled off Barney to try to get him.
Yeah, to try to get him. Right. Because you got to think, when you're a man to man, you're like, uh-oh, I got to go try to get this. Doesn't happen. It's like somebody doesn't call like a back pick and you turn around and that's that alley oop on. You just get dunked on. And that's exactly what happened to you or UCLA right there. And that's a really good offensive. It's a good play call. Good setup play, really good play for young freshmen. When you have a freshman quarterback on the road, you got 2 minutes and at that time, 44 seconds to give him an easy pitch and catch. Really good execution. Good, that's good all around. That's everybody from the coordinator all the way down to the O-line. It's a winning play. And UCLA played right into it, but you'll take what they give you. Mm-hmm. So the next one here, we're going to go defense here. Nico had been really killing us in the run game, right? And it's 4th and 1 again, 14, or this is the series before, because they're driving here. So Nebraska gets the ball back, so I'm just letting the cat out of the bag. But they're driving here, and the quarterback run, this is what's coming, right? And they've done a really good job. Now, if you can't pick up on this dude right here.
I think he's pulling.
He out there, he's like he got a BBL, man. He just... He's letting you know what he's doing. Now, 92 is coming in. He's going to motion over here and come back. This is where the ball is coming. This is an old school ISO power man-on-man run play, which was open. But Nico got in his head and wanted to take it all himself. And there's a little tip. When quarterbacks get inside the red zone or in money time, they keep it like 80% of the time. Why? Because they like the glory.
Well, and also, I think part of it, too, is think how much UCLA's asked Nico to do already this year. So he's got in his head.
That's fine.
I got to do this.
You got to do this. But you think me over we.
Yeah.
When he is really doing well, he's just reading it, and then everything is just flowing together. You look at the Michigan State game, no misreads in the RPO game. He made a crucial mistake, which was at a crucial part in the game. And really gave Nebraska a leg up because you saw the cause and effect of it. So we should have had this first, but I like to do a little bit of cause and effect. So this play is supposed to hit right here. And ISO, let me take this all the way back. ISO right here. Dang, Jake. Right here off the left tackle, right? And then Nico's going to RPO it right here. Now, who makes this play is my man Marshall.
Shout out the DB on the outside making the play.
He ain't scared.
No,
he saw 92. He did it the best way he could. He ain't bust him up a little bit, but the quickness is what makes big guys slow down and eliminates their ability to be really, really physical. When you don't run into a rhinoceros, run away from it. And that's what he did. And you'll see it right here, right? Because they feel like, right? here, let's look at this count here. They feel like when he comes over here, when 92 comes right here, they have the numbers advantage. He's here, so he can get him. He can block Marshall.
Kick Marshall out to the sideline, probably.
He's pulling for Shavers. Okay. Fullback on the safety. So it's an old school, what we used to call boss play, back on safety. Mm-hmm. Bob play back on backer. It's real simple. Right. But watch what happens here. Watch it. Watch my man Marshall get busy. I want to give a shout out. Look, no fair dodging. He reads it, gets across the line of scrimmage, right? Right. Times it up because big man was too casual trying to look cute. Right. They didn't pull. They couldn't pull because I think that Van Poppel got into him a little bit. Right.
Didn't let him get off the ball.
Didn't let him get off the ball. Mm-hmm. They have a stalemate right there. Right. Shavers is coming downhill right here. There's Javen right here. Guthrie right there. And I think that's Sierra, right? I'm not sure. Right. And then you got Singleton, right? The free hitter. But if you're looking at this play right now, even if everybody stalemates and you hand it off to the running back, they get the first down. Because we hadn't won or they hadn't given us direct access to the play yet, mm-hmm. meaning one of these guys in the backfield, even though Marshall is there. But he makes the play. He makes this guy miss a little bit, and then he obviously messed it up so much that Nico messed up his read. Mm. So it's interesting when you watch this right here. The next play, it's going, right? He misses, make him miss again. Little DBs, this dude is 320 pounds. You're not getting a tough man award, but trying to go heads up with him.
Why try to get off a block when you can get around a block?
You'll get the stupidity award getting knocked out by him. Okay. You'll feel all tough, but you'll be in the blue tent or whatever you got to go, right? But look at this right here. Look if the misread, Nico keeps the ball. And look at this. If he just is going, even though I like Singleton right there, that's just, he's going to make that. Right? 9 times out of 10. But Nico decided against it. And guess who caused it right here? Messed up the read because he didn't think Andrew Marshall would be, 4 yards deep in the backfield. Mm. Right? You usually think a defensive back would be here and be scary, and he can outrun him to the corner.
Or run him over. Nico's a big dude.
Run him
over. Stiff arm him for a yard, yeah.
But he didn't. Nico has the ball, as you see it right here. Right, he misreads it right here. This is how crucial a play like this can have on the outcome of the game. You get that first down, okay, and we're talking about playing winning football. They get another first down. I'm looking at the yardage, so they'd be at the worst-case scenario, 36-yard line, 26-yard line with another first. Say they stymie and just go 0-0-0 as far as yards. That's a 43-yard field goal. They're only down 4 points going into half. And the clock is probably bled almost down to zero. Mm-hmm. Well, they lose this turnover on downs. Look at this right here. By Nico keeping it, even though Marshall initially missed him, it made him pitter-patter here. Get off of there. made him pitter-patter. And now you have your free hitter in Singleton coming down already at the line of scrimmage, going to run him down.
And you have another free guy and one of the defensive linemen coming across free as
and
well.
And this is Shavers right here because he has his cast on. Yeah. Right. So all those things right there.
So two of your better tacklers, free guy in Singleton and a guy you really trust to make a tackle in Shavers.
Free hitters.
2-on-1 on the quarterback.
Right. And that's all by Nico. Now he's like, uh-oh, I can't do anything. You're done. Because even though Marshall didn't make the tackle, he assisted the tackle because he made the play, right? Mm-hmm. So when he's in meetings, I'm sure they're saying, okay, we need you to make the tackle. But you made the play, and that's a good teammate. You allow Singleton and Shavers and company to come over here and make the tackle at a crucial part in the game. You got a 14-7 lead. There's no telling if you're going to score more points. You still have a freshman quarterback, right? He could get a little bit nervous as the game gets tighter. It didn't happen for TJ Lateef. So defensively, okay, you got to make plays on 4th and 1, and you made it. They decided to go for it. Nico missed the read because when you look at Nico right here, now obviously I know everybody's chasing the ball. There's a running back right there.
Whoop.
There's a running back right there.
Right. And so, like you said, if he just runs into the pile as the running back, odds are good they get it.
Right, and the ref will probably give him the benefit of the doubt, right, unless you get truly knocked back, but all that momentum's going there. Mm-hmm. And here's the end play, end result right here, right? Like how Marshall got up quick. And there's Singleton, Shavers, 2 or 3 yard loss. Even if he got past them and squeaked through there, that is Javon Wright, and I think that's Guthrie. I like the chances of those guys to stop him anyways.
Mm-hmm.
Those are two different plays. It was a really good offensive play, play call, set up, and execution by the offense, and obviously, you know, Dana and everybody, and then obviously defensively, really good job by Coach Butler and everybody, and then obviously Nico played into their hands.
You really think the defensive meeting group is telling Andrew Marshall he's got to make that tackle?
Every coach is saying that. Every coach.
I mean, there's
you gotta have
there's do your job, there's make a play, and then
hey man.
Man.
Look, now granted,
he made the play possible.
The reality of they're telling him that, but he made the play, but
yeah.
You're like, you know, you make a special play. Coaches are always trying to because here's it, you just can't stop there. You know what I'm saying? When you're trying to get somewhere, you're coaching it, but in the back of your mind, you're like, all right, that was a really good play. Hey man, you know you can make that play. Let's make it next time. Get your money, right? You know, he made the play. Everybody that watches it knows he made that play for the defense. Mm. Now Nico played in their hands, but he made that play for everybody else to clean up. And sometimes those are the plays that I'm talking about are winning football plays because you're making those, even though you're not getting the credit for it. You get what I'm saying?
Oh,
that's
yeah.
why it's
yeah.
important to do so
mm-hmm.
because those are the plays that don't show up in the box score.
Well, that to me is the kind of the inverse example of the Cam Lenhart against Northwestern.
Yeah.
Guy trying so hard to prove a point. Hey, look what I did, right? I took on this blocker. I dominated him.
Oops. Yeah.
And there he goes around the end for a touchdown, as opposed to Marshall saying, hey, my job's to set the edge. I'm going to do that. I'm going to make the guy that they want to be the mismatch look like I was the mismatch for him.
And stopping the run, sometimes it doesn't have to be pretty. It doesn't have to be perfect. It has to just get the job done.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there's other coaching techniques that they would want them to do or whatever, but it worked out really good, not only for Marshall, but then obviously for Singleton and Shavers in the defense. And so they all did a good job on those plays. It was a crucial time and probably a point in the game that really, you know, shifted the momentum and the flow of the game to Nebraska's way that UCLA couldn't overcome.
Well, and like you said, I mean, this stop sets up that touchdown that we saw before.
Right. And
Nebraska took about 4 and change off the clock to go score. They scored on all 3 first half drives before the one play kneel down to end the half. Like you said, I mean, think about it. They don't get this stop. UCLA probably takes it down inside the 2-minute warning. Even if Nebraska has a chance to double dip, how aggressive are they going to be with the freshman quarterback?
Right.
Who knows? But this gave a freshman quarterback and an offense that went 2 for 2 so far this game primo field position.
Yeah, house money and you know, you really had nothing to lose. And so it was set up and that's the complimentary football, I think, that, you know, Coach Rule mentioned sometimes. You want your defense to make plays, your offense get it and take advantage of what the defense set them up to do while you keep the momentum, right? That's where you got to learn how to put the dagger in the heart, and that's what you have to do if you're trying to win these next 2 games. You'll get opportunities against mm-hmm. both teams. You got to cash in on them on one side of the ball and then double down and validate on the other side of the ball, and they did that in those 2 plays and then back-to-back series in UCLA. So another whiteboard Wednesday, didn't have it. We weren't playing anybody, so I didn't have any scouting reports, at least as of yet, unless we're talking about winning the bye week. So it was good to look back at some of the plays that I felt like, or 2 plays that I felt like really changed the momentum of the game. Obviously, the Huskers way. Jay Foreman, Austin Orman, Old School. We'll be right back.
Back to Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
That's right. Welcome back in. It is Old School 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com. 4:30 on a Wednesday, which means we're headed to our Aloe Fiber VIP line, where we're joined by Evan Bland of the Omaha World Herald. Evan, you are back in town. How was your trip out in the foothills of the San Gabriel Mountains to see Nebraska versus UCLA at the Rose Bowl?
It was cool, man. You see the magic on TV of the scenery and the atmosphere and everything else, and I thought it translated pretty well. I mean, the weather was good. Nebraska fans made their presence known, but like the venue itself, I mean, it's in a gorgeous part of Pasadena and Los Angeles, and you can just kind of tell the history that's there and all the iconic games that have happened over the years. So really enjoyed it. It was my first time out there, and would happily go back if Nebraska ever makes it back in the future.
Well, when Nebraska makes it back in the future, sounds like the Bruins are well underway with a move to SoFi Stadium instead. So it works out pretty well that you made the trip out this time to actually get to the Rose Bowl for this game versus having to hope it's, you know, college football playoff game down the road.
Yeah, it'd be a different atmosphere for sure. I don't know that SoFi is dripping with tradition, but it's certainly a little more of a modern venue. And I don't know, like if you're a player, like you probably have more amenities and things, but like, I don't know if you can beat the Rose Bowl setup. That'd be an interesting straw poll to take.
It sure would be. We will see as Nebraska heads back out there again sometime in the future, and unless conferences all of a sudden disband and we get back to rational conferences, but probably not happening anytime soon. Evan, the game itself, Nebraska jumps out to a 21-7 lead at halftime. It's 28-7 Nebraska then in the third quarter. What stood out to you about how Nebraska played in getting out to that 21.3 touchdown advantage, you know, early in the third quarter?
Well, I mean, offensively, you got to start with TJ and EJ, right? Emmett Johnson, TJ Lateef looked like a heck of a combo when Nebraska's scoring on every drive, I think in the first half. I mean, there's efficiency, there was versatility from Lateef's keeping the ball in the first play and getting a first down to Emmett being a workhorse. You know, Lateef showed obviously a ton of accuracy and it doesn't throw an incompletion until the fourth quarter. So you got to love just the look, the added dimension of the quarterback run, how that sparked things. I thought Dana Holgorsen called a great game from that respect as well. And, you know, defensively, like I kind of likened it to like in basketball, how you almost want to let a dominant scorer score as long as they're not getting their teammates involved. I kind of thought that was the approach with Nico Iamalieva, just in terms of like when it was second or third down, like his predisposition was to pull the ball down and run. Like there wasn't a ton of you know, involvement from the receivers or even really the running backs. A lot of it was just Nico making plays on his own. So, I mean, yeah, he converted probably more of those than what Nebraska would have hoped, but I think that was kind of part of the game plan, and it got him out to the big lead. They got a few stops. You know, that defensive front seven had one of their better games. So very encouraging. One of those games, especially with a new quarterback where you just wonder, and you're just curious now how much of that translates over to Penn State and Iowa, which have much staunchier defenses. That'll be the next kind of step to see as we evaluate how Nebraska is looking down the stretch.
The first four full drives were obviously very impressive for Nebraska as they score on their first four, minus the kneel down at the end of the half of the one play, 6 second drive. But Evan, almost as impressive, if not more impressive to me, was Nebraska draining the last, you know, just about 5 minutes off the clock with that final drive. Husker teams in years past, you know, run right into a brick wall, get stopped, punt, other team, you know, typically gets it, goes down and ties the game or takes the lead. I really like Nebraska's balance of running the ball with Emmett Johnson, the hot hand who had a career and historic day in some ways, but also trusting TJ Lateef to make a couple throws as well. One of them to Isaiah Hunter and then one to put the game away on the run. I thought that drive, that final drive, bleeding the last 4 minutes and 47 seconds and UCLA's timeouts, that looked like a poised young quarterback and a stud running back, maybe playing even beyond their years.
Yeah, it was impressive. And Matt Rhule said as much after the game, like if anyone doubted what kind of faith and trust they have in Lateef, like just look at it in those moments. Like if you're not sure about your freshman quarterback, like you said, you're going to run the ball, bleed the timeouts, and then trust your defense, which wouldn't have been the worst thing in the world, just in the sense that UCLA is not an especially explosive offense. So you wondered how much time maybe they would have actually had to get down and do it. But I mean, to your point, they showed that killer instinct, that faith in just being able to end the game right there. You know, don't let it come down to a play here or there. Interestingly, if you listen to UCLA's post game, they actually said they were going to go for two if they had gotten the touchdown there. So, you know, who knows how that thing could have turned out. That could have been another, you know, crushing loss if things went a certain way. But I mean, to Nebraska's credit, like that's kind of part of what this season has been about, is being comfortable in these close situations, just to the point of not feeling that pressure and being able to execute down the stretch. And that's what they did. I mean, again, you look at how those plays developed, what they called, like that was not a team that was afraid to lose. That was a team that was trying to finish that thing off. And to their credit, they did. And they're a 7-win team with, you know, 2 big games still yet to add to what's going on here this season.
UCLA does creep back into that game, making it the one possession game that it ended up. But Evan, after the game, or maybe this was on, I think it was on Monday, actually, this press conference, Matt Rhule said, Nebraska is one of only 7 defenses that hasn't allowed 400 yards to an opponent yet this year. First and foremost, how did you assess how Nebraska's defense played in light of, you know, holding UCLA to 21 points, but a couple long scoring drives where they couldn't get off the field? What do you assess from the Nebraska defense out of that one?
Yeah, I mean, kind of like I was saying, I thought that the way that they approached Iamalieva made a lot of sense. Just because they didn't have a lot of different ways that they could beat you. Like, you contrast that with USC a week earlier, and their quarterback could run, he could pass. They had a dynamite running game. That just wasn't the case with UCLA. So I thought it was a good game plan in terms of like picking your poison, knowing what to stop. We were reminded again, like, Nebraska's secondary just doesn't give up long pass plays, and that's not been a forte of what UCLA is doing anyway. But I think when you have a secondary like that, it does allow you to stack the box a little bit more, be a little more aggressive in how you stop the run. And they had a few moments, you know, where UCLA went for it on fourth and short and got stuffed, and some third downs where they were able to commit a little bit more. So I thought that was encouraging. You know, Nebraska would say that they would like to force a few more takeaways probably than what they have to this point. But I think you do look at the tape on the rewatch, and you see, especially along that defensive line, like, you do see guys that are playing better. I thought Keona Davis had one of his best games. He was in on a lot of the run plays, certainly. You know, Riley Van Poppel had a good game. Williams Winery was disruptive again. So I think it was just encouraging. You're seeing some of these guys in, you know, playing their 6th game in 6 weeks, be physical, be explosive, you know, being disruptive at the line of scrimmage. So I thought all that was encouraging. And, you know, again, you spin it forward and you see, like, UCLA or Penn State and Iowa are also not explosive offenses. They're kind of similar in a lot of ways to UCLA in terms of their more deliberate drives that they tend to have. So that's kind of the next step for Nebraska, is when you are in those third and shorts, can you finish that thing off? Can you get a little bit more pressure on the quarterback? But I think given some of their limitations, i.e. they don't have Ty Robinson and Nash Hutmaker this year, they've schemed around it better than not. And I think that showed up last Saturday night.
When you hear that stat about not allowing 400 yards, does that mean something? Is that a meaningful accomplishment for this Nebraska defense that has had its ups and downs? Or is that a head coach who's trying to find something to inject some confidence into that unit? Like, hey, guys, we actually are a better unit maybe than we give you credit for, given that we have to coach you pretty hard to make sure you're on the top of your game.
Yeah, I mean, you'll take it. It's not like the defining stat. Obviously, scoring defense, red zone defense, success rate, like touchdown rate, that's another big one that they look at. Points per play, which reflects, like, you know, long fields versus short fields and things like that. Like, I think that those are all more indicative. You know, I think maybe one thing that you can look at when you look at those yards, one is they're not giving up explosive plays. But I think, two, you got to give some credit to the offense, too, for limiting that defensive exposure maybe more than what we've seen Nebraska do in the past, where, you know, if the offense is putting together some extended drives, then that's obviously cutting down the possessions that the other teams get. And that's not something Nebraska's been great at a lot in the last 10 years or so. So I think it's a good recipe when you can keep the ball in front of you, like Nebraska's done a good job of, and again, limiting their possessions as well. So it's a defense that's not perfect, but I think it's been pretty good despite some of its limitations. And again, like, it's setting up these last couple of games where you're not necessarily afraid of either the next couple opponents, you know, running laps around you in terms of how their, or what their ability is to score. So, maybe not up to the last couple of years, just in terms of the dominance stopping the run, but I think it is a defense that's sort of figured out its identity, especially these last couple of weeks.
And it should be noted again, that was a defense that was playing without senior transfer Desan McCullough, who was held out of that game as a little bit of a late surprise to Husker fans. We're talking with Evan Bland of the Omaha World Herald here on our Aloe Fiber VIP line. A couple things then from Matt Rule's Monday presser. Evan, I think the first thing that stands out in light of the UCLA game itself is just how hard Matt Rule was stumping for his starting running back, Emmett Johnson, for all sorts of national awards. The stats are up there. Does Emmett Johnson, you think, have the juice or the vibe among voters to have a legitimate chance to maybe not Heisman conversation, but be in that Maxwell and beyond kind of conversation for offensive player of the year?
I mean, that's kind of where I'm at with the discussion. The Heisman thing seems hopeful at this point. You know, maybe he has a couple dominant games here down the stretch and can really inject himself into that conversation. But I mean, a lot of the numbers are certainly very impressive when you talk about rushing yards, yards from scrimmage, his versatility as a pass catcher and a rusher. I think he's got the numbers certainly to at the very least be a Doak Walker finalist. You know, and there are a lot of awards that he could get that would be meaningful for Nebraska in terms of like showing some progress on an individual level. Like the fact that you have to go back to 2011, the last time Nebraska had a first team All-American in Levante David's kind of crazy. You know, and they're all Big Ten first team draft. You got to go back to, I think it's Kenny Bell in 2014. Yeah. So like those are things Nebraska needs to be hitting with a little bit more frequency. So even just hitting those honors, if Emmett can reach those milestones, like that's important for the program. And then, yeah, you talk about the Maxwell and him being one of two semifinalists for that as a running back. Like that's impressive, certainly. And so, yeah, I think like, but in terms of the Heisman, like you just have to, I think, take into account the fact that there's so much volume with what Emmett Johnson does. I mean, just in terms of the number of carries that he's getting, I think on a per carry basis, you look at a guy like Jeremiah Love at Notre Dame, he's probably the best running back in the country, but he's having to split carries with some other pretty talented individuals. So the fact that Nebraska's got three losses, it doesn't help Emmett's case for the Heisman, but man, he's having a great season. And you would think there are going to be some awards coming his way that not a lot of Huskers have had here in the last 10 to 15 years.
The other thing that stood out to me from Monday's press conference with Matt Rule was when he said, yeah, Nebraska's good now. We're set. We got everything that we need when it comes to resources and facilities. I thought that was interesting to hear from Matt Rule, not saying he's right or wrong. He obviously has a much firmer grasp on such things than I would. But after a few months of saying, yeah, I mean, we need more investment. We need more $30, $40 million roster, this or that. Either Nebraska all of a sudden has some very gracious benefactors to get him to that limit or that point, or maybe someone said, hey, you know what, Matt, you're in a pretty good position here, right? Stop asking for more. Now's not the time. I didn't know what to make of Matt Rule all of a sudden saying Nebraska's a have. They're not in with the have-nots or the want-mores. How did you interpret that little, offshoot of Matt Rule's presser?
Yeah, it was notable for sure. I mean, you think about what he said when the Penn State job came open. I think some of that maybe was a leverage play a little bit and saying, hey, you want to, if I'm going to stay and we're going to do this thing, like let's make sure that we're at the high rollers table on this. But in terms of rev share, like Nebraska's a full participant in that, and typically teams are putting roughly $15 million of that 20.5 toward the football roster. I think Nebraska's in that range, certainly. And then you look at like the other differentiators of what it takes to go above the cap, so to speak. A lot of that's going to be true NIL. So we're no longer talking about donations from boosters here. We're talking about connecting players with real sponsors. And I think one thing Nebraska can do is turn some of the sponsors that it has been working with as an entity and putting those sponsors directly with some of these players. I think that's one area where you can funnel some more of those deals and help facilitate that. There is still some aspect of the the donations that can occur. You can still pay high school players to before they get to campus as commits or as visitors. So I think most schools are doing some of that. And so there are a few different things. Multimedia rights, that's another area. I think Nebraska is trying to up the ante a little bit and turn more of that into, you know, player payments. But, you know, I do think it's possible some of those things could have happened in the last month from when Matt Rhule was a little bit less bullish on the situation. But I agree. Like, it's certainly notable, especially as you get closer now to the portal window opening in January, where Nebraska feels like it can go out and be competitive with just about anybody. And it's going to have some needs to address. And it feels like it has the resources to do it now.
There you have it. Good breakdown of Husker football, as always, from Evan Bland of the Omaha World Herald. Find him on Twitter and, of course, always at omaha.com. Evan, appreciate your time, as always. Enjoy your weekend off. Last one for a couple weeks here. Thanks, as always.
Thanks, Austin. See ya.
Evan joined us on our Aloe Fiber VIP line. Aloe Fiber is where they understand the importance of exceptional service with local heart, the official home internet and TV provider of the Huskers. Big shout out to them. Big thanks again to Evan. We'll bring Jay Foreman back in. Wrap up Hour 2 of Old School. Jason Peter on his way. He'll be in here for Hour 3 of the show right after this.
Back to Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
One final short segment for Hour 2 of Old School. Don't forget Jason Peter on his way in. Austin Orman, Jay Foreman with you for now. This segment brought to you by the good folks at Love Volleyball Nebraska. No longer Love Volleyball Omaha, Love Volleyball Nebraska. Their season's getting underway here in about a month and a half. Become an insider, become a Love Volleyball member. Visit LOVB.com. Also, your chance to secure your season tickets right now, or you can renew them as well. Richie Rich, appreciate you chiming in. Ernie as well. Jay, we will also go to Kip on our Sartor Hayman Jewelers text line. He says, I'm a very glass half full Husker fan and I'm enjoying the season a lot. How do you judge Dane Key's usage so far this season, in your opinion? To me, he seems to be a Ferrari that gets left in the garage a little bit.
I think he's had his moments. I think it was a work in progress, and then, you know, it kind of switched where he had a couple of really good games, and then Hunter got off, and then Barney. So it was kind of, you know, in the early in the season, in the silly season, they were able to kind of just to, you know, feed whoever could, you know, really get going. I think it was like, whether it was quarters or halves, you saw him get, you know, get going. It was good to see him break free a little bit last game. Obviously, we had that on Whiteboard Wednesday. I don't think they're not using him. I think, you know, Hunter kind of emerged and maybe, I don't know, maybe exceeded expectations in some things. And then, you know, with Emmett, you know, running so well, and then obviously in the pass game as well, you know, that it takes away, you know, potential touches for, you know, the wide outs and everybody else. And Lindemeyer, you know, put together some few good games and stuff like that. So I think it's just more maybe being, I don't know who else was around him in Kentucky. Whereas here you obviously have a guy that's really playing well every single game in Emmett, and then Hunter had been playing pretty consistent, and same with, you know, Lindemeyer, and obviously Dane Key as well.
Key starts the year off with a bang, 6 for 51 and a touchdown against Cincinnati. He actually had a game in all three non-conference, or a touchdown in all three non-conference games. Michigan came, that was a little bit of a disappointment for me. Yeah. Jay, 3 for 36 is all, not really a huge factor, followed up by nothing, no catches, no touches against Michigan State. Came back, though, maybe not in a big statistical way, but was the guy down the stretch for Nebraska. Had the go-ahead touchdown to take the lead over Maryland, and I think that's a big sign. You think about even the touchdown that he had against USC. Really nice catch. Yeah. So, no, he's not putting up the volume stats or the rate stats necessarily, but I do think that Nebraska has trust in him. When the game's on the line, they'll start looking his direction. They've done that before. Whether it's a big moment early on, hey, here's our big-bodied 50-50 guy, we'll throw it up to him. Or, you know, hey, let's get a chunk play. We can isolate him in a matchup, like you pointed out on Whiteboard Wednesday. Go back and check that out, by the way, Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter streams up. You can rewind that after the show. I don't think that Dane Key's not been used. I think, sure, maybe sometimes he didn't get off coverage the way he was supposed to. Maybe against Michigan. Certainly against Minnesota. Another, you know, nothing burger from him. When worth every penny, maybe not in terms of just the raw production, but I think he's been a good influence on that room and has stepped up in enough big moments that you're good with what you've gotten from Dane Key so far.
Yeah, I think, you know, down in the red zone when he's been able to get his chances, he's, you know, been able to cash in. And so, you know, I think he's been all that that's advertised. And obviously, if you didn't have the emergence of Hunter, you would probably overfeeding Dane Key. So,
yeah.
You know, and also sometimes, you know, the wide receiver position is hard because you could be winning all the time and other things, you know, you're dependent on so many other factors,
right?
Coverage, who's covering you, other guys not being covered or covered. And if you're the first, second, or third read. So, you know, I think he's done all right.
Fourth on Nebraska in catches with 28, third on Nebraska in yards with 360. He does also have 5 receiving touchdowns. Tied for the team lead with Isaiah Hunter. Also, second in terms of the high volume guys when it comes to yards per catch, averaging 12.9 per reception. Jason Peters in the house. We'll go to break, bring him in. That'll be hour 3 of Old School next on the ticket.